What if they strike at our nuclear arms? Interior Minister Tong Ji asked. They already have, Zhang reminded them. They sank our missile submarine. How do we defend against it? Tan Daxi asked. If such an attack should be made, we should launch them. The principle is to use them or lose them. That is our one trump card, Luo explained. The one thing that even the Americans truly fear. Well, it should be, Zhang Hansan agreed. It might now be a good time to tell the Americans that we have those missiles, and the willingness to use them if they press us too hard. Threaten the Americans with nuclear arms? Fang asked. Is that wise? They must know that there are lines they may not cross, Zhang insisted. Luo, are the missiles ready for launch? No, yesterday we did not agree to ready them. To do so takes about 2 hours to load them with fuel. Comrades, I think it is in our interest to ready the missiles for flight. No, Fang countered. That will be seen by the Americans as a dangerous provocation. And we should have Shen remind the Americans that we have such weapons and they do not, Zhang went on. That invites an attack on us. I think not, Fang. They will not gamble millions of their citizens. Gambling, you say? Do we gamble with the life of our country? Zhang, this is lunacy. I do not have a vote at this table, Tian observed, but I have been a party member all my adult life. What have we done here? We've turned China into a thief, a highway robber, and a failed highway robber at that. We can recover from the damage we have done. That recovery will require humility on our part, not blustering defiance. To threaten the Americans now is the act of an impotent man trying to show off his gao. It will be seen by them as a foolish and reckless act. If we are to survive as a nation, if we are to survive as the rulers of a powerful China, Zhang countered, we must let the Americans know that they cannot push us farther. No, Fang retorted. That is tantamount to the threat of nuclear war. We must not do such a thing. If we do not, then we are all doomed, said Tan Daxi of the Ministry of State Security. I am sorry, Fang, but Zhang is correct. Those are the only weapons with which we can hold the Americans back. They will be tempted to strike at them, and if they do, we must use them. Because if they take those weapons away from us, then they can strike us at will and destroy all we have built in 60 years, Zhang concluded. I call a vote. Suddenly and irrationally, Fang thought, the meeting had struck out on a path leading to disaster. But he was the only one who saw this, as for the first time in his life, he took a stand against the others. There were 25 UH-60A Blackhawks and 15 Apaches on the ramp. The flight crews were grouped together looking at maps. Clark was dressed in his black ninja gear, and a soldier directed him and Kirillin to Colonel Boyle. Howdy, Dick Boyle. I'm John Clark, and this is Lieutenant General Yuri Kirillin. I'm Rainbow, he's Spetsnaz. Boyle saluted. Well, I'm your driver, gentlemen. How close do you want us to put you on these missile silos? Land right on top, the bastards, Clark told him. Boyle nodded. The helicopters all have numbers on them indicating the silo they're flying for. I'm flying lead and I'm going right to this one here. That means I go with you, Clark told him. How many? 10 plus me. Okay, your chem gear's in the aircraft. Suit up and we go. Objective in sight, Boyle said over the intercom, then the radio. Bandit 6 to Chicks, objective in sight, check in, over. 2, 3, 4. 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10. Cochise, check in. This is Cochise leader with 5. We have the objective. Crook with 5, objective in sight, the second attack helicopter team reported. Okay, move in as briefed. Execute, execute, execute. Cochise flight went in first, heading for the barracks of the security battalion tasked to guard the missile base. There was a guard shack outside. The weapon selected was the free-flight rockets carried in pods on the Apache's stub wings. The first salvo of four blew up the guard shack and its two sleepy guards. The noise would have been enough to awaken those in the barracks building, but the second salvo of rockets got there before anyone inside could do more than blink his eyes open. Cochise 4 and 5, lead, go back up, Crook, we don't need you here. Roger, lead, they both replied. Crook Flight, also of five Apaches, smoked in just ahead of the Blackhawks. It turned out that each silo had a small guard post, and those were disposed of in a matter of seconds with cannon fire. Then the Apaches climbed higher and circled slowly, looking for anything moving, but seeing nothing. Bandit 6, Colonel Dick Boyle, flared his Blackhawk 3 feet over silo number one. Go! The co-pilot shouted over the intercom. The Rainbow Troopers jumped down just to the east of the actual hole itself. The Chinese hat steel structure, which looked like an inverted blunt ice cream cone, prohibited dropping right down on the door itself. The base command post was the best protected structure on the entire post. It was buried 10 meters underground, and the 10 meters was solid, reinforced concrete. Inside was a staff of 10 commanded by Major General Tsun Ching-yan. Like all members of the People's Liberation Army, he was a highly disciplined man. The alarm had been raised by one of the silo guard posts, and his staff switched on the television cameras used for surveillance. They were old cameras and needed lights. What the fuck? Chavez shouted. Turn the lights off, he ordered over his radio. Chavez hosed one with his MP-10 and the lights went out, thank you. No other lasted for more than 5 seconds at any of the silos. We are under attack, General Sun said. We are under attack. But he had a drill for this. Alert the guard force, he told one NCO. Get me Beijing, he ordered another. At silo number one, Paddy Connolly ran to the pipes that led to the top of the concrete box that marked the top of the silo. To each he stuck a block of composition B. Into each block he inserted a blasting cap. Eddie Price and Hank Patterson knelt close by. Fire in the hole! Patterson shouted, running back to the other two. There he skidded down to the ground, sheltered behind the concrete, and twisted the handle on his detonator. The two pipes were blown apart a millisecond later. Masks, he told everyone on the radio, but there was no vapor coming off the fueling pipes. That was good news, wasn't it? Come on, Eddie Price yelled. The three men, guarded now by two others, looked for the metal door into the maintenance entrance for the silo. Ed, we're on the ground, we're on the ground, Clark was saying into his satellite phone 50 yards away. The barracks are gone and there's no opposition. Doing our blasting now. Back to you soon. Out. Well, shit, Ed Foley said in his office, but the line was now dead.